Hello, and welcome to Icon Art Radio. This is Bill Teeple, and I'm sitting here with Bill Teeple, Alan Cobb, and Donna Colby. No, wait a minute. This is Alan Cobb, and I'm sitting here with Donna Colby, and Bill is nowhere to be seen. He's returning some chairs, I think, from Icon Gallery, where we just had a wonderful showing of two more Inuit films. And he should be joining us shortly, perhaps, while this show is in progress. So if you hear some rustling and crashing, you'll know it's Bill. So, Donna, you were you had some questions about digital photography.
Yes, mainly I don't understand how it works at all, and I'd like to learn. Because, I mean, just even something simple, like, for example, if you go online to, let's say, Google Images, and you have this whole row of pictures of something, they have little numbers, like 347 by 422. Mm-hmm. And all I know is that the higher the numbers, the better the picture looks if you print it out.
Right.
But when I'm describing, you know, if I have to have a conversation with somebody and explain to them this, I have no idea what either of those numbers mean. Does it have to do with pixels? And if so, what are pixels? And how does that make the picture sharper and so forth? So can you explain this to me?
Yeah. Now, of course, a lot of this is easier to explain with pictures, funnily enough. But there's some basic ideas that I think I can get across in a radio format. First of all, those numbers you're looking at, those two numbers, are what we might call the pixel dimensions of the image. If it says 400 by 300, that means ostensibly that it's 400 pixels wide and 300 pixels tall. Now, the question of what does that really mean is, and this is where people start to get confused, and it's actually very, very simple, but it's also very, very confusing. It's a good example of something that's simple and confusing. Essentially, what makes the difference between a picture that looks good and a picture that looks bad is a combination of how many pixels there are and what kind of display mechanism is involved. Is it printed on paper? Is it on a computer screen? Is it on a movie screen? Is it on a billboard? Because all of these things have different resolutions in terms of how many pixels there are in an inch or in a foot or in a yard.
So first of all, just to go to square one, because I'm assuming that a lot of people listening to this already know what a pixel is, but there may be somebody out there who doesn't actually know what a pixel is.
Oh, absolutely. Can you tell us that? Yeah, I think there are plenty of people who don't know what a pixel is, and who could blame them? Basically, pixel is a contraction of picture element, and it reflects the fact that when you print a picture, even using, you know, printing presses in 1925, without anything digital going on, you're making the picture out of little dots. Now, the way dots are used back in the 30s and 40s and 50s and 60s and 80s on printing presses is somewhat different from the way dots are used in a computer on the screen or on a computer printer. But we're still talking about dots. And essentially, although there are some technicalities that would make the answer much more complicated, essentially a pixel or a picture element is synonymous with a dot. So if you imagine a picture in a newspaper, a black and white newspaper, if you look at the pictures, the photograph on the front page closely, you can see that it's made up of little dots of different sizes, but they're all black and they're all arranged in a grid. Those dots are essentially fooling the eye into seeing shades of gray and lines and edges and surfaces and things. And so what we're doing when we're making a digital picture is we're using some number of dots. And the tricky thing is that if the dots are big, then the picture will be big and it will look dotty unless you're standing really far away. So, for example, in some cases, if you could go to a billboard and get up real close to it and see how some of them are not made with dots, some of them are painted, but if it's been printed on a giant digital printer, which many of them are nowadays, if you go up close to the thing, you'll see that the dots are about the size of a penny. They're huge. And if you're standing 5 or 10 feet away from it, you can't even make out the picture. It's like looking at a Seurat painting from, you know, a foot away. It's just blotches, and it doesn't look like anything. But if you're looking at it from 150 feet away, which is more likely, then the number of dots in your field of vision is very high, the number of dots that would fit in your field of vision. So when you're looking at a picture in a magazine, the dots are much smaller, and the picture looks better than it does on a newspaper front page. When you're looking at the computer screen, the dots are reasonably small, but they're also bright colors and they're backlit, so they have a sort of an extra quality of colorfulness and, about them that kind of overshadows the fact that the dots themselves are actually not all that small. Typically, they're only, you know, about somewhere between 70 and 100 dots per inch on a computer screen. And to put that in perspective, when laser printers first came out, they were 300 dots per inch. And when they were used to print type for a book or something, people complained that the type looked rough. There was enough of the dot showing, even just sort of subliminally, that the type didn't look smooth enough. So very soon they evolved into 600 dots per inch, and then the dots really, the edges began to disappear and the letters looked really perfectly formed. So if it takes 600 dots per inch to make a smooth laser printer character, you'd think that a 70 dot per inch or 100 dot per inch computer monitor would look terrible, and yet it doesn't. And it's really just, you know, a visual side effect of the fact that it's a beautiful clear dot that's backlit and you know has color. Now, of course, if you look at it with a magnifying glass, you'll see that each one of those dots on the computer screen is three dots, a red dot, a green dot, and a blue dot, right next to each other. And those three dots taken together are what we really mean by a pixel. It's a dot of color that's been mixed. So when we're talking about the resolution of a digital image, we're talking about the pixel resolution, not the actual dots, because the printer might use 5 dots per pixel, and the screen uses 3 dots per pixel. And there might be some other method of rendering a color that uses 4 dots. I mean, some printers use 4 dots per pixel, some use 7, some use 8. So we're not talking about those actual absolute final dots, which make the illusion of color work. We're talking about little elements of the littlest element of the picture. So that's what a pixel is. I don't know if that.
So when you, let's say, going back to those numbers, when you see you know, a picture on the internet and it says like 300 by 400 or 780 by 950. When it has bigger numbers, does that mean that the dots are tinier?
No, and this is the other, this is like the second thing that confuses people. Mm-hmm. These are perfect questions. People think of the dots as having a size because when they view it, the dots have a size. But in the computer, the dots don't have a size. And that's conceptually a little tricky for people to get their head around. They're just specifications of what color the next dot would be. And if a picture is 1,000 dots wide and you're printing it on a printer that prints at 300 dots per inch, it's going to be a small picture. It's going to be 3 1/3 inches wide. If it's 300 dots wide and you print it, so to speak, on your computer display, which might be 100 dots per inch, then it's going to be 3 inches wide. It's going to be big enough to get a good look at. But when you print it on your printer and it comes out the size of a postage stamp, you're going to think, whoa, I should blow that up. Well, it's because the dots are smaller, that the picture is smaller. And on the screen, the dots are bigger, but it's the same picture. Mm-hmm. And so the dots themselves don't have any size until you say what kind of device you're going to be using to make the picture visible. Mm-hmm. So they're virtual dots in the computer, and then they're actual dots on paper or mm-hmm. on a... And again, I like to keep the billboard in the equation because the billboard has such gigantic dots. I mean, they might be as big as your hand even, and it would still look like a photograph if you're a couple hundred feet away. And imagine how much computer disk space it would take up if you had to have, you know, 10 million little tiny dots across the billboard. Mm. It would be excessive resolution. It would mean that from 150 feet away, it looks like a photograph. And if you climb up on the scaffold and stand in front of the billboard 2 feet away from it, it would still look like a photograph, which means that there's information in that picture that no one's ever going to see, and it's basically a total waste to try and reproduce something like that. Now, some artists have done things like that. I think that, in fact, recently at the Guggenheim, they had some interesting digital image show going on with some huge images that were actually high resolution, so that, you know, you looked at it from a distance and you saw it, but you could walk up to it and continue seeing more and more detail until you were standing right in front of it. That's one of the beauties of photographs that are taken with, you know, 8x10 view cameras and things, some of those Ansel Adams photos and stuff. Because you see a picture in a magazine of an Ansel Adams and you think, yeah, that's a beautiful picture. But when you see the real thing and it's, you know, maybe 11 by 17 inches, you can walk up to it and look at it with a magnifying glass and see all the trees. Mm. It doesn't deteriorate into a blurry bunch of blobs because it's done on, you know, relatively fine-grained film. And grain in film is analogous to the dots on the computer printer, on a digital printer. It's analogous. Basically, nature says you can't have continuous tones at every level of detail. You know, as you zoom in on anything, it breaks down into little things. The little
now, our eyes
bits.
Themselves, our physical eyes, do they see in little dots?
Yes, they do. Isn't that amazing? They're entirely dot-oriented. We see with, you know, rods and cones, and the cones are the color detectors, and the image is projected by a lens system, just like a camera, onto a sheet of film, only the film is curved, so it's easier to get a good optical image on it. And the film's basically the backside of the inside of your eyeball, and we call it the retina. And those rods and cones are sensitive separately to red, green, and blue, just like the pixels on the computer screen. So just as we are made in God's image, the computer is, to the extent that we know ourselves, made in our image, possibly before we even were thinking about it that way. But that means that, you know, our vision is intrinsically full of resolution issues. If you close your eyes and just gaze at the blackness or maroonness or whatever you happen to see inside your eyelid, if you look closely, it's dots. It's little tiny, sparkly specks of different colors, kind of random colors, kind of like what you would find on the workbench where someone has been making cloisonné and sprinkling finely ground dusts of vitreous enamel, and all the spill has collected around the workpiece, and there's what they call bench enamel all around it. And from a distance, it looks kind of grayish brown and muddy and not very interesting, like you get when you start mixing too many colors on a palette. But when you look at it up close, it's all different bright colors. Mm-hmm. And what you're seeing when you close your eyes is essentially the noise in your optical sensor. And you get the exact same result when you take a digital camera and take a picture of blackness. You put the lens cap on, close its eye, mm-hmm. take a picture, and then look at that picture on the computer. And when you blow it up, it isn't black. Hmm. It's got little sparkles and it's got color noise in it. At some point, when it's absolutely black, there'll just be a few sparkles. But if you shoot something in extremely low light, you'll find that there's a whole pattern of noisy dots all over the sensor inside the camera. And that's very similar to what you see when you close your eyes.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't think about that. We think it's just black because we're not looking, really,
right.
when we close our eyes.
We define it as black.
But when we specifically, like when you give us this assignment to do that, it's obvious that there's all kinds of stuff going on there and changing, too. It's not just... You know, it isn't just, which is kind of an interesting thing, like what would cause that, where you close your eyes and you see a certain pattern of the little colors and dots and everything, and then you open your eyes, close your eyes again, and it's different.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things going on here, and I should just interject for those of you who are listening to this show while you're driving to work. Don't be closing your eyes while we're talking about.
And before we,
about it.
Yes, but before we go on to this explanation, Bill Teeble has just joined us. As we said in the beginning of the show, he wasn't here. Now he's here, so he'll be joining into the conversation as well.
I told you to ask Alan a technical question until I got there, and I really did it.
We agreed on an interesting.
What was the question?
That was Bill speaking in the distance. Now he'll be speaking in the foreground.
Well, I just said that I knew I'd be late, and so I told Donna to ask Alan a technical question. And I take care of the whole first session. It sounds like you did it.
Yeah, we're going to go for another 2.5 hours on this one.
Yeah, make sure you notice when the time is up here.
So, for
my sake and the sake of the person who just tuned in, what was the original question that got us into pixels? Because this is a subject that most people wonder about, and I'm glad it's getting in the can.
It started. It was just a question about what resolution means, and my original question was, what do those numbers mean when you see an image mm-hmm. on the internet? You know, that says 300 by 400. What does that mean? And then we took it from there.
Okay. Now, the word resolution deserves a little bit of definition. It's one thing that we're saying is that the more dots, the higher the resolution. And we're also saying that the more dots, the higher the resolution, the clearer the picture looks, the finer the detail. But resolution also applies to the output device because the output device has some physical size. And so if the output device has only, say, 100 dots per inch, that's not considered high resolution. Mm. You can put a high resolution image on a low resolution device. And what you'll get is, if you don't scale it, you'll get just a tiny portion of the high resolution image because there aren't enough dots on a piece of paper to get the whole thing. Or you'll have a gigantic image that's low resolution, a gigantic printout that's low resolution. And we call it low resolution because when we view it holding it in our hands, 100 dots per inch isn't high resolution. Mm-hmm. But 100 dots per inch on a billboard is hugely high resolution. Mm-hmm. So it would be an idiotically high res billboard, even though it's an unfortunately low res printout. Mm-hmm. And it's the same number of dots per inch and the same number of dots in the image. Mm-hmm. So resolution is kind of a slippery concept that really applies in context and it doesn't have an absolute meaning.
So we need to go back to that question because remember the question was that we stopped at mm-hmm. a minute or so ago was when you close your eyes, you see a certain pattern and certain kind of colors. You open your eyes even for 2 seconds and close them again and you see something different.
Yeah. Well, there are some wonderful things going on there. One is that biological detectors like the rods and cones in your eyes, and I guess I should mention the rods are for seeing in black and white and low light levels, and the cones are for seeing in color when there's more light. And so we're really talking about the cones, but the way it works is these detectors only detect change. They don't actually, they're not like meters that measure a steady state. They have to see something change in order to send a signal into the optic nerve and up into the brain. And so if the image doesn't change at all, it becomes no image at all. If you were capable of holding your eyes absolutely still, you would eventually see just a gray field with nothing in it. And then when you moved your eye, even just the tiniest little bit, suddenly the whole image would be there again. So when you open your eyes for a minute and then close them, what's happening is all those rods and cones are getting stimulated, and then you see the after effect as they relax back into their kind of noise, their ground state. But there's a mechanism in the eye to prevent you from going blind by forgetting to move your eyes. Not that it would be that hard. And they're called saccades. And what happens is every few hundred milliseconds, your eyes move microscopically in some random direction. They're twitching. And they're twitching at all times. They never stop. And during the time that they move, the image moves on the retina. When the image moves on the retina, we should see a blur. But we don't. And the question is, how could we not? If they're twitching around and everything in our field of view is jumping, kind of like a bad movie projector is jumping around on the screen all the time, why don't we see that? And the answer is shocking. It's because while the saccade is going on, the optic nerve cuts off and we don't get to see the motion. We are stone blind during the time of the actual micro motion of the image. And then the image switches back on again in a new position. And then the brain takes the two images and shifts one of them around and lays it down on top of the last image so that it makes sense.
This is happening constantly.
It's happening all the time. You can't stop it. You can't even tell you're doing it unless you do an experiment. If you were to find a wristwatch with a second hand that jumps 1 second at a time and look closely at the second hand for a while, you'll notice that about once every 20 or 30 seconds, if you're lucky, it might take a minute or more, and it gets boring. But if you watch that second hand very closely, you'll notice that every now and then it's late. It's like it's going perfectly once every second, and then every so many seconds it like almost misses one. It doesn't catch up. It just does that last second later than it should have, and you can tell it's the wrong timing. And that's because you had a saccade at exactly the moment that the second hand moved. And so it doesn't register that it moved until the saccade is over, and then you see that it's in a different position. And so you actually missed the motion of the second hand, and then your brain filled it in for you. Huh. And during that blind spot, of course, you saw nothing, and the brain filled that in for you also. You aren't allowed to see nothing. If the sense of sight is turned on, which brings me to the most exciting aspect of this whole thing, which is Agnes Martin. And I just sort of threw her name out because we're running a little bit short on time, and I want to try and get the basic idea out but not forget to mention her. When you see in your inner eye during a very, very settled state of awareness, such as after you've been meditating for 15 or 20 minutes, you may notice now and then that there is a visual field before you which is not made out of little sparkly dots, that it is in fact motionless and doesn't have any scintillation texture to it like everything normally does. And there are also times when that field contains some content or texture, but the texture is regular. It's not random sparkles like bench enamel. It's actually a grid. It may look like fabric, or it may, and we have this expression beyond the veil, and it's interesting how much it can look like a veil. But it may look like just like a grid, and you think to yourself, why would it look like a grid? I have no answer for that. But when Agnes Martin got into the final phase of her paintings, she, as she said, painted with her back to the world, and she painted with great delight grids, something she saw inside that was absolutely regular, and its regularity and its pattern was for some reason terribly enticing to her. And I don't want to try and interpret that any more than I've done by implication right now, but I think that what's going on here is that the inner sense of sight, let's say the brain side of the equation, is perceiving using the conceptual side of vision, but without any actual input from the senses of the eyeballs. So the optic nerve isn't involved anymore, but the vision processing portions of the brain are still going. And they're seeing something that's not coming from the external world. They're seeing something that comes from inside, and whether it comes from the cosmos or from pure consciousness or just from some interesting phenomenology of brain, you know, activity, I can't guess. Mm-hmm. But I find it rather interesting that, you know, I've experienced, and many people I've spoken to have experienced, this sort of perfect inner vision of a grid. Mm-hmm. And you'd think, gosh, shouldn't it be like a sphere or something sort of intrinsically cosmic? But apparently not.
Well, and there is a, to me anyway, a real fascination with grids.
Yes, there is.
In like a painting or a checkerboard or anything like that. It's something.
Yeah, we're surrounded by it. Yeah. And we build, you know, rectangular things to live in, and our eyes move horizontally and vertically. We detect, you know, perpendicularity very, very easily in things. Nature makes trees go up, straight up, and the horizon goes straight across. So it's very fundamental.
Listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.